You're listening to the Leafs Lunch Podcast, Hour 1.
The other side of it is, you know, we took a shot today with Michael Bunting, and he plays, you know, I know he's not the same size as Zach, the way that he plays, it's been a much shorter sample, but it's just trying to find players that kind of fit that same sort of profile and can play that same sort of way. And I also hope guys on our roster like Ilya Mikheyev and Pierre Engvall look at Zach and the way that he played every day and think, geez, like, they have the physical attributes to do that. They have the speed. They each have the tenacity, the ability to push the pace up the rink. And, you know, the door will be wide open for them as well.
That was Kyle Dubas yesterday in Overdrive. Welcome to Leafs Lunch. Jim Taddy, Kristen Chilton with you. A second last Leafs Lunch for the season, and he's talking about Michael Bunting stepping in into Zach Hyman's skate boots. But having said that, it's an open audition for a lot of people. I mean, it's not just one person. Kristen, welcome. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, thanks, Jim. How are you doing?
Very good. And you know, when you look back on this, I mean, I applaud the Leafs for what they did. I mean, you know, I think it's a volume sale. There's no question about that. But there's a lot of movable parts here. What was your take on what they did yesterday?
Yeah, I don't think I was expecting more than what the Leafs did, to be honest with you. It's said on Leafs Lunch previously, I like Michael Bunting. I thought that they should have been targeting him. And so it was actually, I think, a great move on their part to bring him in. And I do think he can be kind of like a Zach Hyman light. And I told you before that it just seemed to me like there was a lot of the same attributes to his game that, you know, you're not expecting him to be a top line guy, but for a second, third, fourth line person who can fill in really any role you need in your middle six or on your fourth line, I think Bunting was a great signing, and they got him on a good contract. And then I thought the David Kampf signing as well was really intriguing, because the reviews that I've gotten from people in Chicago who have covered him, they really thought that there was more that he could have done for the Blackhawks. They were a bit surprised that he didn't get a qualifying offer. So I think that they're putting their investment, the Leafs are, into potential. The potential, of course, already of a Mikheyev, the potential of a Pierre Engvall, but also the potential in the players that they signed yesterday. And same with Josh Hosang, who will come in on a PTO. It's a lot about potential for the fill-in players on this roster. And we can talk about Peter Mrazek as well. Of course, that was a bigger signing. But to me, it's all about what's next for the Leafs. And there's going to be a lot of opportunity for anybody who wants it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it's etched in stone. Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Nylander, and everybody else fits in around them, which is the way it should be. So you've got the two spots on the left side of both those lines, and then the six forwards that will play behind them, and you can mix and match. There's a lot of flexibility in terms of contract commitment, in terms of dollars, and in terms of players' ability, which I like. I mean, I couldn't etch it in stone that it's going to work, but I think it's a logical next step. How about you?
It definitely is. And when you look at the teams who will be populating the Atlantic division, now that we're going to go back to that, you know, that setup that we've seen traditionally, I look at the teams that got better. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, two-time Stanley Cup winners, they're a great team. Florida is a great team. Boston is a great team. But what the Leafs have, I think, I wouldn't say an advantage, but a difference for them is that they're not going to have the same expectations for greatness, let's call it, next year. And that's going to give these players a chance to settle into roles. It's not like they're coming into the season with all this pressure and expectation of, you made these big signings and there's this huge expectation on new guys coming in to play big roles right away. No, there's going to be a feeling out process. There's going to be some games early on where Sheldon Keefe is going to be moving guys around. The bench is going to be active. We might see any number of combinations that are going to be tried out early on. And I think that's a good spot for the Leafs. The main guys, the centers positions on your top two lines, the winger spots on your top two lines, at least two of them, those are set in stone. But how everyone else pieces together, it remains to be seen. And I don't think that's a bad thing for players who are looking for that next role for themselves. The Buntings, the Camps, the Mikheyevs, even the Engvalls. There's going to be time to figure it out in an 82-game season. But the pressure isn't there for the Leafs, I don't think, to have that that great start, because you know what? It seems like people are talking about them like the fourth best team in the division. Use that to your advantage and find out how these guys are going to fit in without all of the external pressure.
Yeah, nicely said. I mean, it's gone from looking for the missing piece to a developing story up front, and certainly a developing story between the pipes with the addition of Peter Mrazek. Let's bring in Jamie McLennan from Overdrive. Noodles, welcome. How are you today?
Not too bad. How's everyone today?
Everybody's doing well, and yeah, sifting through the new puzzle pieces. So when we talk about developing stories, you've got all those forwards, and really it's two on the top two side, the left side of the top two lines, and the six that play under. I'm going to leave the defense alone because it's pretty well status quo. But then you've got the developing goaltending chemistry as well. Interesting that they went this way, and I applaud them for it. What are your thoughts on what they did?
I like Mrazek. I thought he was, for me, a top target, not only for Toronto, but some other teams out there as far as when you're in a tandem situation. So I circle a team like Edmonton, who was looking to upgrade if they could move past Koskinen, because they like Smith and they like the leadership from Smith and the way that he handles the puck and speeds up their defense. But you know, I would think that Mrazek was a guy that they would have targeted. Maybe Philadelphia would have looked at that scenario as well. And it was musical chairs. And as we sat by, I mean, Kristen was with me in the free agency room, and Tatman, I'm sure you were watching, but it was, you could just see how quickly goaltenders were being snapped up, and it was moving at a rapid pace. So if you had a plan A and a plan B and a plan C, because you might have gotten to that where you had offers in and it didn't get accepted, I thought Kyle came out looking pretty good in a scenario where, I said this before, you had more of a traditional starter in Frederik Andersen and a backup in Jack Campbell. Campbell pushed through to show you he can get more minutes last year. So they pivoted from a starter backup to a tandem situation. So, you know, Mrazek to me was a top tandem goaltender that was available, and they were able to get him. I thought it was a reasonable contract. You know, Jonathan Bernier got 4.125. Now he's going to get some hazard pay going to New Jersey, and that market's a lot different. But you know, to get Mrazek under 4 on a 3-year term, I really like the deal. He's still got a lot more runway. It's not like he's 37 years old and kind of been through the ringer of the league. Like, he's late 20s, still has lots of good hockey left. And now you've got an open net; those two will battle it out for ice time.
Well, Jamie, when you think about the season that Jack Campbell had, let's call that the best that Jack Campbell's ever looked.
Yeah.
Think about the best from Peter Mrazek. If, let's say, both guys are at their best level, who is the starter on October 13th for the Leafs?
For me, personally, I think Mrazek is a slight better goaltender than Campbell. Now, that being said, they both run hot and cold. And I kind of joke that, Steve Briere, their goaltender coach, was going to have his hands full, because both of these guys don't rely as much on structure as they rely on just battling to stop the puck. I think Campbell has a little bit more structure than Mrazek, but when you watch Mrazek, he's not a big body, but he battles. He works in the net. So sometimes if you run hot and you run cold, there'll be a time where we're talking this year where Mrazek's on a heater. Like, this guy, you know, he's got to start 5 in a row because he's playing that well. That being said, if he cools off a bit, now it's a scenario where maybe Jack can go on a run. But both of these goaltenders, they're not Freddie. They're not a 6'4" big body that just kind of is real mechanical in the net, makes things look easy when his game is on. You know, they work in the net. So you're going to see a little different dynamic. And when they're both at their best, Mrazek, for some reason, I think he's just got a little bit more flash to him. Now, it may not be that he's better. It's just that sometimes he makes it look better. I used to joke that my old goalie partner, Grant Fear, he'd get scored on and he would look amazing. He would make it look amazing. And that's kind of how Peter has that flash in his game. And you'll see it. And, you know, I think he'll be a crowd favorite, as Jack is too. He's just such a likable guy. Mrazek's an emotional guy that you'll be able to kind of really gravitate towards.
Jamie, take us behind the scenes. I mean, the chemistry of a tandem, what makes it work, and what can get in the way of it working?
You know, I have no problem with the competitive nature where the guys want the net. But you also have to be respectful where you're not hampering the other player. If you have a tandem and there's respect between the two, it's support. Because when you look at it, outside of the goaltender coach, you're the only two in the room that understands goaltending. The other guys, they just sit there and go, stop the puck. We don't care how you do it. Just go and stop the puck. Whereas your partner is kind of the only guy you can lean on to what he knows what you're going through on a particular night, in a particular week, you name it. So you have to be able to rely on each other. I like the word healthy competition because I think there is such thing as a healthy competition. Throughout my career, 17 years pro, I only had one partner that was disruptive. And I actually ended up confronting him and just saying, like, I know you want the net. I want the net as well. But that doesn't mean we can't be friends off the ice. That doesn't mean we can't support each other. And when I confronted him about a month into the season, we ended up being a very close tandem. So it's more about just if you have conflicting relationships, it's not a problem as long as you support each other and be good pros. And I don't see a problem with either one of these guys supporting each other during the season.
Noodles, did the Carolina Hurricanes overpay for Frederik Andersen?
I don't think so. The reason being is you see the marketplace out there, and it's almost like you're looking at tiers, okay? So is Freddie, would you consider him a starting goaltender? I would. And how many starting goaltenders were available yesterday? I guess it would be Grubauer. It would be Ullmark, if you believe the sample size of Ullmark and his underlying numbers. And then there's Freddie Andersen. And then there's some former starters that were available, and guys like Holtby, who got bought out, and, you know, kind of guys who had kind of on the other side. Halak is a former starter, guys like that. So I looked at the marketplace. I thought it was a nice contract for Freddie. And then, again, I pointed out, you know, Jersey gives Bernier something with a four in it. So I didn't think the term or the number was bad at all. In fact, in looking at it this morning, I think they got a good deal, $4.5 million for a two-year deal, and then they also got Antti Raanta. That tandem, if they're healthy, is real sharp in Carolina, if you ask me.
And Noodles, if you look down the highway and you see the Buffalo Sabres, you have to say, no guy. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, but they just, I mean, they did some last-minute shopping last night for goalies, but man, this has disaster written all over it, doesn't it?
Well, it has rebuilt. Like to me, and I know this is an organization that's been in a rebuild and all of that, but, I mean, that's not Kevin Adams' fault. Kevin Adams has been on the job 1 year, and he's basically inherited, you know, somewhat of a mess, and he's trying to clean it up. I don't know if you guys saw the Zoom call for Sam Reinhart. He was almost climbing through the computer. He was so excited to get to Florida. You know, like those guys, there's been some hazard pay that has to be handed out for some of the stuff that they've gone through in Buffalo. Just, you know, they had such a tough year with COVID and everything. And, you know, even last summer, I liked some of their moves. It just didn't work out. But ultimately, there's the elephant in the room in Jack Eichel, and what are you going to do with that? To me, there's two teams that are openly, you know, hey, we're going to kind of flush this out and see what a high draft pick looks like next year, and that's going to be Buffalo. And Arizona is just in a fire sale right now, looking to pick up as many picks. And, you know, I thought they did very well with Colorado at getting a first and a third and Timmins. To me, Arizona kind of had Colorado over a barrel once Grubauer moved on to Seattle. So, you know, I think those two teams are openly tanking, and then everyone else is trying to get better. So, bargain bin, all signs had pointed to Craig Andersen. Even his media is like, yeah, I'm retiring. And all of a sudden, Buffalo signs him yesterday on a one-year deal at $750. So it looks like he's coming out of retirement to play for them.
Well, and just to follow up on that, I mean, at this point, can Jack Eichel go back to Buffalo? Like, can he, have they painted themselves into a corner here where it's like, we got to move him now after all this?
I think so. And I don't know if this is, like, I'm not laying this all at Buffalo's feet. I think Jack Eichel has to be culpable in this situation as well. I'm not privy to the injury or the nature of it, so I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to guess on that. But to me, it takes two to tango here, and you know, I haven't been put behind the curtain to know exactly what the situation is. But, you know, Eichel's a guy who has to own some of this as well. He's a fantastic player. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a top 10 centerman in the world. But, you know, he's a guy that has been part of that culture as well. And he has to own this. I don't know how much. I won't lay blame in the percentages. But I think that relationship is fractured and done. And to the point where Kevin Adams was like, I don't know if he's in Buffalo and skating or not. We don't have that information. So usually if you have a top-tier player, if that was Austin Matthews and he had an injury, Kyle Dubas would know his whereabouts every second of the day. You know, and Kristen, you know how good that training staff is. And you know, Dr. Noah Foreman, who doesn't get enough love. I love him as much as anybody. Like, he's on top of everything. So I don't know what's going on with Buffalo, but I think there's a lot of blame to go around. And ultimately, I think they're going to have to move away from Jack. But the question is, what do you get for him? And the return, is it ever going to be good enough?
Noodles, you know, circling back to the lease, we're not going to escape the scrutiny on the top four forwards. So here's one thing I want to throw at you. When people depart, so when Zach Hyman leaves, when Freddie Anderson leaves, these guys are, they're buddies, right? They're friends, and everybody understands that they really couldn't afford to re-sign either one of them. It would have been a stretch. So if you're in that top four and your buddy has to leave, I mean, that puts even more pressure on you to understand, you know, your role with the team. You have to get it done. Do you agree with that?
I do, but I, you know, I think the pressure, this market comes with pressure, and I think they welcome that. I think when you sign a big contract and you've gone out and, you know, statistically earned it, I know that success hasn't been there, but Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner had unbelievable regular seasons. That William Nylander is right on par financially. You know, John Tavares was unrestricted. They landed the golden goose in unrestricted free agency. They just haven't delivered in the playoffs. And I say yet, because it's a work in progress. But yeah, is there pressure there? There has to be pressure every year, Tatman, and because you look at the year before, it's Kapanen. Like, how would this team look a lot different if Kapanen and Janssen were on it? And both of those guys are making 3+. Like, you can't afford in the cycle to keep on your third line guys who are making that much money because of a flat cap. And it's unfortunate. So there are cap casualties every year. If you went back in revisionist history, wouldn't this team look a lot better with Kapanen and Janssen on it? I think they'd look deeper. I think they'd look more dynamic, and you'd be talking about a top nine instead of just a top, I guess, 1.5. When Kristen, you were talking about the top four, the down the middle and on the right side. The left side's a work in progress. The third line, you know, before you brought me in, you were talking about opportunity for players like Kampf and Bunting and Mikheyev and Engvall to grow. This is why you have to have that type of players allowed to grow on cheaper contracts, because you've spent a lot of money in the top of your roster.
Okay, we'll play a little confirm or deny right
sure.
Now. The going into the season, the power rankings of Atlantic Division teams right now are the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers, the Boston Bruins, and at number four, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I would say I'm not sleeping on Montreal. I know people think that Montreal's junk. You know, oh, they wouldn't have made the playoffs. Well, yeah, Carey Price got hurt. Shea Weber was hurt. Brendan Gallagher was hurt for a good chunk of the season last year. And they didn't have Caulfield in the lineup. Suzuki was taking another step. Like, I look at this team, and, you know, with Weber and Price's knee injury, like, could they struggle? Sure. But they also could be full of confidence and go, this is how we want to play. We know we can play with anybody. Like, I think this is a team that could be right there. And I'll say confirm it, but I'm going to say, like, it's not going to be an easy four for them. And who knows? The Leafs could go a bit higher, and here's why. Stopping pucks in Boston might be a lot tougher than just adding Linus Allmark to your mix. You know, it might look a little different, because Tuukka Rask, for me, is an elite goaltender. Halak is a fantastic, like, 1A, more backup guy, but he gives you very good minutes. That goaltending situation is going to look a lot different in Boston. It might take them a bit to settle in. And, you know, there has been a little bit of turnover. Foligno going in there. They step away from Nick Ritchie. You know, what are they going to do with Jake DeBrusque there? He's a guy who really stubbed his toe. So there's some question marks in Boston. There might even be question marks in Tampa based on that third line, you know, not being available. Like, third line's gone. They disappeared into thin air. They're in Calgary. They're in Seattle. And they're in the New York Rangers. So, you know, there might be some guys that have to push through. But I could say that the Leafs, are they going to be in that top four? I would say I hope so, and I think they will. But I still think Kyle has some work to do here this summer. Like, I don't think he's icing this team and being confident that they can go deep into the playoffs. He's got to add some more depth here.
Jamie, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Jamie McLennan, Noodles from Overdrive. And the note that he ended on is actually I was going to ask you as we get set for Curtis Garbiel, who will join us in the next segment, one of the new Leafs. So there's a lot of talk out there, and I would assume that there'd be other things that will happen. But, you know, what do you see happening in addition to what they've done yesterday, maybe from now until when that team breaks camp and starts the regular season? There's some work that will be done. We don't know what it is, but maybe a trade or something like that. Where are you on that, Kristen?
Yeah, I definitely think there's more to address with the blue line. Unless you are a really, really confident general manager in your players like Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren, and even Travis Dermott, unless you really believe that they're going to make like a seismic jump, you've got to bring in somebody else. And that's nothing against, it was Biega and Dahlstrom that they signed yesterday on just those 1 year minimum league contracts. But that's not enough. You lost Zach Bogosian. And it wasn't a sexy signing at the time. It probably became a bigger deal that he wasn't coming back because of what he was able to do during the season. There's not a ton of defensive depth that you can feel really confident in with this team. So I understand the many forwards that were added. Yeah, they weren't flashy and they weren't particularly, interesting to a lot of people, but there's potential there. I'm a little bit concerned from a Leafs perspective that the defense hasn't really been addressed more. And again, that those top two spots on the left side, you have to believe that you've already got that piece internally because you've got about $5 million in cap space to work with. And there's probably more that you need to do on the blue line just to make sure that you have the pieces in place that if you are dealing with injuries, Jake Muzzin's been injured every year. Morgan Riley's dealt with injuries. TJ Brody has been, you just don't know it. If one of those guys goes down, one of like your core three, what are you going to do? So that's to me what the Leafs kind of need to look at is just making sure that they have the depth on defense that we're not talking about, hey, you know, they figured out how to score goals again. But once, as we talked about for years, the blue line's letting them down.
Yeah, I sort of looked at, some of these, especially up front, but also at the blue line, is there's, the first 41 games of the regular season, you get a look. I mean, you're going to get a look at Sandin and figure out if he's going to take the next step, and that may play into what you eventually decide to do with Morgan Riley. And up front, aside from the people that they've signed yesterday, Nick Robertson has to get a look. Joey Anderson has to get a look, and I think they have the time. I mean, over 82 games, you could certainly spend the first half of the regular season looking at this, and if you're not liking what you're seeing, you could always package people and make a deal then. Would you buy into that?
Yeah, and we know that Kyle Dubas is not afraid to make trades. He's not afraid to move, whether it's draft picks, although they don't have a ton of draft commodities at this point, given what they've done the last couple of years. He'll move prospects if he has to. Look at, moving Philip Hollander even just to get Jared McCann. And doesn't that Jared McCann trade just I saw fans, a bunch of people on Twitter yesterday just saying, like, this is when you need to trade for Jared McCann again. Like, you need him back. And it's just, they gave up a prospect to get a player like that, orchestrated that trade. But that was the pre-expansion draft era. And it just changes so fast and everything changes so quickly that, as the famous Mike Babcock line, the truth today is not the truth tomorrow. And so it's an ongoing process for Dubas and every GM in the league to figure out how to fill in the holes on their roster, how to do it within the constraints of a flat cap, and how do you manage your future with your present. And that's where I feel like the Leafs are right now, is that how much can you afford to give on your future in order to succeed in the present? And that's going to dictate what they do in terms of trades, in terms of what are you, I mean, you already, the Nick Foligno trade, it was every bad thing that could go wrong with the trade went badly, because he came in and it looked great for those first five games. And so you were excited and you were thinking it was worth the first round pick, and then the wheels fall off and suddenly it'd be one thing if you could just tell from the start it wasn't going to work, but it would have worked. If he had been healthy, it would have worked. And that's where it just, you know, the frustration kicks in and you have to start thinking, okay, we gave up that first round pick. Are we going to give up another one to get another rental and be in the same spot? Or are we not, and we're going to take our chances on what we already have? So that's where I feel like the Leafs are in the unenviable position of, what do we do to safeguard the future, but then also win right now? I don't know how you answer that.
Yeah, that's the ultimate question. And certainly everybody who doesn't win a Stanley Cup has that posed to anybody who makes the playoffs and disappoints and goes out early. Coming up next, we'll have Curtis Gabriel, one of the new members of the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, also available on the TSN and iHeartRadio apps.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
I just really like everything that Curtis is about. We know what we're going to get from him in terms of his effort level, his passion every single day, and his work rate on the ice, on the forecheck, the physicality part of it. And, you know, just seeing the amount of work he puts into his game, trying to improve his skill set. So I think he'll be a great fit for our development program. And he's certainly going to make his presence known with who he is.
That's Kyle Dubas talking about the newest Maple Leaf, Curtis Gabriel, signed along with three other forwards, two defensemen, and a goalie yesterday in a very busy flurry of signings by the Leafs. Jim Taddy and Kristen Schulten with you, subbing for Andy Petrillo, who's on Olympic detail. And we'll welcome in Curtis very shortly. But in the meantime, I mean, what I like about all this, Kristen, is that the Leafs got out in front of every situation, which is something they may not have done in the past, but is very needed right now, isn't it?
Well, we've talked a lot about the disadvantages of being in the tight cap space that the Leafs are, but on the other side of that, you don't really have anything to hem and haw over, which is kind of nice. It gives you the opportunity to just say, this is what we have, this is what we're going to be capable of doing, so let's just do it. Let's not sit on our hands and think about it too hard. Let's just go in and we're going to sign the players that fit our budget, and that hopefully are going to fit our scheme, and perhaps we can adjust our scheme to fit our players that we're signing. But it just doesn't, you know, for teams that maybe have more, you know, more space, or they have more money, maybe they're thinking a little bit, you know, they're thinking more about how do we want to use that. Whereas Leafs, they don't have that luxury. And at the same time, they can get ahead of whatever it is that they're looking to do. And I thought that they were proactive yesterday, going after Bunting. They got Mrazek done. These things were done quickly and done early. So you've got to like the fact that, you know, they recognize their position. They're in it because of the reasons we've already talked about, and they were able to sign some players that they at least believe in the potential of.
And, you know, the other thing is when you circle around the forwards they added, I mean, they're all going to evolve differently, but they all bring a good work ethic and some grit to the table. And, you know, if you go back to when Zach Hyman first showed up, that would describe him, and he evolved very nicely, obviously.
Yeah, it's all about high character, high work ethic, guys who, you know, it's not their talent necessarily that jumps off the page and you think like, wow, that guy's got, you know, unbelievable hands, or he's going to, you know, be able to put 20, 25 goals in for you. It's more about, even when Dubas was talking about Bunting, he said, you know, he gets to the front of the net and he doesn't shy away from, you know, those dirty areas of the ice. And he can, you know, he found his scoring touch last year in that brief time that he spent with the Coyotes. And how are we going to build on that? And that's, you know, the worker guys are the ones who are in front of the net. You know, that's where they make their money. That's where Zach Hyman was. That's where Wayne Simmonds goes. That's your workers. And then you have guys like Kampf who can do, you know, he's 6'2". He's a big dude. So he's going to be working in those same areas. Curtis Gabriel, same thing. It's all about how hard you want to play. And the Leafs have a lot of finesse. They've got a lot of guys who've put a lot of goals on the board, and now they needed to add some grit, some physicality, some character, and that's where I think that guys like Bunting and Gabriel, they're going to fill in that need that the Leafs really had.
Let's bring in Curtis Gabriel. Curtis, welcome. I want to say congratulations off the top, and new market kid. What does it feel like to sign with the Leafs?
Thanks for having me, Jim and Kristen. As I was just telling the last interview I did, it's crazy to grow up in this area, GTA, and follow the team. Can't really not be a Leafs fan, and you always keep tabs on them wherever you play, and the center of the hockey universe, as we know, it's kind of crazy to wrap your head around right now. I don't think it's sunk in, and hopefully when I get to see my mom at some point, or maybe I get some gear show up or talk to Haley Wickenheiser later today, maybe it'll sink in.
Oh, Curtis, take us through this process for you. Kyle Dubas mentioned yesterday that you were skating at FPC, that he noticed your work ethic. How did it come together that you guys talked and you felt like this was going to be a good mutual fit?
Yeah, I think it's been a couple of years in the making. I worked with Barb Underhill. I got in with her, DMing her on LinkedIn. I think she didn't take anybody else, but I wrote her a message like, I need to work on my skating bad, and it pulled on her heartstrings enough to let me work with her. And that was 2 years ago. So I think Kyle's just obviously around the rink and seeing me work with her and having a close relationship with her. I think it started there, and kicking tires with my agent at the trade deadline last year. Just kind of building to a point where maybe the timing's right now for me to come in, and I think it is. So kind of strange, but I think I'm ready for it now at 28. I don't think I would have been ready for this kind of opportunity at a younger age, but I think you mature, you grow, you work on things, and I think it's just the perfect time now.
I mean, some big names on this roster. What do you think your fit is, and do you know anybody on the team?
I don't think I know anybody right now on the team. Just, hockey's such a small world. You know some guy that knows a guy. It'll be kind of those kind of relationships. I just see myself, just like Kristen was talking about there before I came on, just exactly what she's saying. Me, Bunting, and Simmer are guys from the Toronto area, and we're going to bring that crazy amount of passion that, that Leafs fans want, I guess. And I'm just excited to add that to the mix here with those guys and see if we can bring that grit like she was talking about. I think going to the hard areas and doing all the hard work, I think that's what we thrive on. And anybody who knows me, even summer skates, whatever it is, that's what I live for, is just playing really hard hockey the right way.
Well, Curtis, when you think back to 2 years ago when you sent Barb Underhill that message, what was your mindset like in terms of how you viewed your career and your opportunities at the time? And how has that evolved for you the last 2 years after having the chance to work with her and now seeing this one-year contract come together with the Leafs?
Yeah, it's kind of different. I think at that summer I was coming off my time in New Jersey, hoping that I'd get a good opportunity the next season. Didn't happen with the team I was with, and kind of got buried a little bit, and was tough to swallow, spending third of the season in the NHL and kind of feeling like I broke out. But you go back to work and use what you learned from her, and obviously the pandemic stopped us from working together last summer, but it's funny how life works. But as I said, I don't think I was ready for that opportunity back then. I had some learning and growing to do and maturing, and now coming back around, it just seems so perfect, so serendipitous, and life works in weird ways, but I think you want to get to a certain destination. You might not get there the way you think you will, but it always ends up seeming to work out.
Now, you described an inner feeling where it just feels like a really nice fit. Have you ever had that before in your NHL career?
I think you always try to, as part of it, you just try to recalibrate your brain to wherever opportunity you have, you're going to make the most of it. But I think there's an extra special kind of, feeling to this one, just being a hometown guy. Like I was talking to Jordan Binnington yesterday and talking about, see if we could hang out before I leave for the summer. And I went, wait a second, I'm not leaving. Like, I'm staying here. So it's super weird. But that's just that special added element that makes it so fascinating.
Okay, so you're growing up as a Leaf fan. Who were you in road hockey? Like, who was your Leaf guy that you wanted to emulate or that you loved the most?
you know, I think if you saw the tweet on Instagram I put out yesterday, I had goalie gear on at my ninth birthday. I borrowed my buddy Charlie's pads because I love kind of Curtis Joseph era, you know, same name kind of thing. And but for me, it was, you know, I love Matt Sundin and how he's like kind of the leader of the team. But I was a big like Darcy Tucker guy. I think that's no surprise. You know, I'm the type of guy that's watching Wendell Clark, absolutely annihilating people on YouTube and you know, montages and just getting fired up for that stuff. So that's the kind of players that I love. And just that killer instinct. I know Brendan Shanahan talked about that. I paid attention to that press conference, and I think that's what I love about hockey, and I think that's what I do best.
Curtis, a developing hockey story for you, but also you're an advocate to LGBTQ. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's just something that got humanized to me 2 years ago. Friend of a friend got in a relationship with another woman and just wasn't supported by our family. And it got humanized to me. Being a, you know, a white, straight, cisgendered hockey player playing at a high level, you're sheltered from a lot of things. And it really opened my eyes to how other people, how they live and what they have to go through. And from, you know, working with Pride Cape and getting connected with people like Brock McGillis, just learned a lot about what these people go through and that they're just normal people. And in a lot of senses, they're better people because they understand more hardship in life and understand to be more accepting and open. So yeah, really just trying to push that message that it's really normal, like 20% of the population's on that spectrum and maybe more. And you're seeing amazing things happen with Carl Nassib and Luke Prokop. I think things are changing and it's here to stay. So if you're not on board with that, I think the ground's going to move from under your feet, but we're going to keep on working on progressing those things. And just really everything. If you work with one issue like this, you're really working with them all. The intersectionalities of all these social issues, they're all intertwined. I don't think we can all fight each one ourselves, but I think it's on our obligation of everyone who thinks they're a member of society to kind of pick up the slack a little bit and focus on something that you're passionate about and trying to make the world a better place.
Well, that's such a terrific and much needed message. Do you feel like you get a sense that hockey and hockey players are more open to those conversations now and that maybe we are moving in truly a more positive direction, at least amongst the players and their openness to, you know, experience, you know, these types of conversations?
I think before Luke came out, I'd probably say no, but how it's been going since then, I think there's some really good hope. And there always was hope, but I think it's better now for sure. Obviously, we have a ways to go. There's a lot of people that still aren't on board with these issues for a smattering of reasons. But I do think guys know it's coming. Really, just the biggest thing we have to tackle, honestly, is just the fragility around the conversation. And I understand it because I was there. When Brock McGillis called me 2 years ago, I'd never been on a phone call with an out man who played hockey, and he could tell I was uncomfortable right away. But that's just something that you got to work on yourself. And I think a lot of guys are just kind of worried about saying the wrong thing and not knowing what to say or how to act. But I think it's just jump right in with good intentions, and you can't really go wrong. That's what I've found. If you have good intentions, you're gonna learn as you on the fly, and people are gonna help you out. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Just letting guys know, like, it's okay to learn about these things. It's okay to be, you know, not super educated on it. It takes time, like anything. When you first jumped in hockey, you didn't have the best shot. You didn't have the best skating. You worked on it over a long time. So just jump right in, and I think we'll continue to make hockey more inclusive.
Curtis, extremely well said. Thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
That is Curtis Gabriel, one of the new members of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sorry to step on you there, Kristen. You know, hey, I love talking to players about everything, and the you know, certainly his hockey passion, along with passion in other areas of society, is just displayed on his sleeve, and I really love that about him.
Well, I think if this whole last week or last couple of weeks where we've just seen so many athletes, like whether it's Luke Prokop, whether it's Simone Biles, whether she, you know, where she's prioritizing mental health, like athletes are people, and they're people who have other, you know, they love what they do, but they're also humans who have other interests and people who have been affected by different things in their lives that are eye-opening and that make them passionate about things beyond just what they do in their jobs, because that's what it is. I mean, of course, everybody loves sports and we love sports, but it's a job. It's not necessarily their whole life. So when you can see that passion translate from what they do in this case, on the ice to the issues facing us as a society. It's just, it truly makes for really well-rounded people, and you understand why Curtis Gabriel is coming to the Leafs. They need not just players who can contribute hockey-wise, but also just really good people who it seems like he's going to fit the bill for that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just going to throw a thought out, and we can chat about it if you like after the break. But, you know, with the salary cap and certainly wagering, it dehumanizes how a lot of people look at athletes. They are people. We're all people. And you know, what's happening, I applaud, because it's sort of a correcting force that makes you understand the humanity. I've said this many times. The humanity sometimes leaves the equation with the analysis, and I applaud anybody who can stand up, get attention, and help people move forward, because that's what we are. I mean, we're not commodities, we're people. We'll continue on analyzing what the Leafs did yesterday and what lies ahead. This is Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, also available in the TSN and iHeartRadio apps.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
Yeah, he's a very difficult player to replace, Brian. There's no doubt about that. I think what we're going to be counting on is the continued growth of our own players internally, and then, you know, with signing David Camp, it allows us to be more flexible, so you can potentially put Kerfoot onto the wing as needed, and Kerfoot has shown that great versatility has been such a strong asset for us, and he's kind of been able to go back and forth and be able to play both of those roles, so that's been outstanding, and knowing we have that is great.
Kyle Dubas talking about flexibility, and I think when we went into yesterday, we were looking for cap flexibility, and what you actually got was roster flexibility. Get out of your vehicle, lease ASAP, over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. Yes, guy, what a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. What a relief for Corey Perry. 2 years with Tampa. That's intriguing, isn't it, Kristen?
Well, if you can't beat them, Jim, then you got to join them, right? I mean, Montreal goes down against Tampa, and now Corey Perry, sign me up, boys. Let's go. No, great. I think that's a solid signing for Tampa. They obviously had some cap issues of their own, but Julien Brisebois, he's filling in the holes on his own roster, too, with Corey Perry. I thought was such a surprise, and I know I'm not alone in that, but no one probably expected that he would have the kind of season that he did and be the contributor that he was. I mean, you look at the playoff points for Montreal last year. I mean, yeah, you had, okay, Suzuki, Caulfield, Tyler Toffoli, but then, like, sneaking right in there in the top five was Corey Perry, and you wouldn't maybe have thought that. That he would be still such an active contributor, especially for a team that doesn't have that wasn't scoring a ton of goals. But really, for him, he turned that 1 year league min sort of contract into a great opportunity with Tampa.
You know, and it's great because when the Stanley Cup final is over, you can look back at the stories, the ones that worked out or the ones that may have surprised you. But at the start of the playoff run, you have absolutely no idea what could happen. And I guess, you know, I could apply that to the Leafs roster. We'll talk a lot about Bunting and Kemp. And to me, those are pretty intriguing players. The rest are equally intriguing. But these two guys, if they were to become one of those stories, I mean, they could take the team with them, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much. Usually in the 5 years I've been on this beat, any kind of a signing, there's always, I feel like, you know, this sense of anticipation, this sense of, well, this could be, you know, a low risk, high reward signing, and this guy could come in and make such an impact. And I didn't get that feeling yesterday. I think that maybe Leaf fans are a little bit, you know, they're just tired. You know, they're just exhausted of getting their hopes up. And this is one situation where I feel like maybe you could a little bit, you know, and maybe you could feel there's some real potential in some of these guys to come in on low money deals. And I mean, look at Jason Spezza. Let's just use Jason Spezza as an example here. I don't know if people were too pumped when the Leafs signed him on a 1 year league min deal, weren't thinking too much about the impact that he could have at this late stage of his career. But then look at what happened last year. I mean, 10 goals and 30 points. That's big. I mean, Ryan Getzlaf signed for $4.5 million on a 1 year deal with the Ducks. He had 17 points last season. Like, and he's 2 years younger than Spezza. So, I mean, you just never know. When you make these signings and you make these deals, and I'm not comparing any one player to the other, just saying that hockey is a weird sport because you get opportunity and you turn it into something. And maybe you're not excited right now about Curtis Gabriel, but you might just be loving him when he's out there playing, you know, that first season Matt Martin was here and the role he played and keeping the flies off, so to speak. They need that. They need some more of that kind of energy. And that's where these guys come in and they change the narrative of the Leafs being this easy, flashy team to play against, because you can't just shut them down physically. And if you can't just shut them down physically, there's opportunity there for Toronto. So I do think, maybe I'm just a glass half full person in general, but there's reason to believe that these forwards can have an impact, even if they're not big names.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential there. I got about 90 seconds to wrap it up. I mean, there's potential there. And maybe the team has gone from looking for the missing piece to refocusing on the core players and the flexibility around them. I kind of like that transition.
Yeah, and there's no white horse. There's no one coming to save the Leafs. There's not one player that they're going to sign. And it's like, that was the guy we were missing. The guy you were missing is wearing number 34. You know, he's wearing the number already on his jersey that's going to, you know, those are the guys that have to make the difference. And they're the ones that are going to take this team where they want to go. And that's completely fine. That's what you're paying for. But that doesn't negate the potential impact of these other players that the Leafs have also brought into the fold.
Yeah, that is the biggest argument is, what number will Peter Mrazek wear? Because 34 is gone.
I don't think he could afford the dinner that Austin Matthews would require for that number. So we'll see what he lands in.
Yeah. Okay, so enjoy the conversation. We'll be back to wrap up the season for Leafs Lunch tomorrow, Kristen. Where did it go?
I don't know. I can't believe it's the end of July, Jim. And we have one more show. And then I guess I'll see you probably the following week at this rate. But, you know, not on Leafs Lunch. Yeah. Maybe I'll see you around, though.
Yeah, you will. It's already penciled in. I want to thank Kristen for being with us today. And, of course, thank everybody for stopping by. Game day is next.